Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You're tuned into SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Grab a drink and grab a snack. Welcome to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law, hdlawsc.com. I'm Rob Williams. He is Craig McMichael, and we want to build a relationship with you. This is a serious sports conversation for a serious sports fan or a casual sports fan. We found that, you know, we can go either way. We want to just be with you like we're chilling at the bar, at the diner, at the cafe, talking ball. And boy, do we have some things to talk about today. Are you kidding me? Craig, you know something that we haven't done? We have so many talking points to even get through tonight. So I'm just going to start us in slow roll mode.
Because let's just ease into it. Ease into it.
Are you drinking anything tonight? Is there anything?
I got nothing.
I got nothing right now. We used to just every week comment on our drinks. I have a mug here. You can't see it. My screen is glitching. Of eggnog. Because it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, my friend. But it was not Christmas for Notre Dame and the Irish today as they found their way out of the college football playoff. We have that and so many other things to talk about here as we get into it. But before we really get into anything, I want to welcome people who are coming in, flooding in. We got some friends here in the chat box. Welcome to those of you. Weekend Warriors is excited about Duke. Garnet Lovejoy over there wants to talk about the offensive coordinator moves in Columbia, South Carolina. I don't have any updates as of right now. However, I am of the opinion that Kendall Briles would be a great move if and when that may happen. What we need to do first of all, though, Craig,
is ask why the hell are you drinking eggnog? Like, why are you drinking curdled milk?
Because it's delicious. It's Christmas time.
Question right for the people out there. Do you drink eggnog?
Do you drink eggnog?
We want to know. Or do you just pour it down the sink?
That's it. We want to know. Okay. Every week on Friday, Daily Joy and I get together for the SEC Pretty Campus segment. This week she was staying at home because she lives in Atlanta. She's there for the SEC championship game. So remember, if you're just tuning in with us, we're going to play this 10-minute segment so that we can point out areas where Joy and I were wrong. So keep in mind for the next 10 minutes, this was on Friday. This is the SEC Pretty Campus tour with Daily Joy, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night. It is the SEC Pretty Campus Tour. I am Rob Williams. And of course, always, we have Daily Joy, founder and owner of SEC Pretty. And we are repping today, Joy. I love it. Perfect representation. However, you may have on the wrong colors for me, considering it's SEC Championship weekend. We made it. It's the end of the year. It's the end of the year. How are we feeling? It's been a long road of the regular season. So let's take a moment and exhale and reflect on the season that was, Joy. How are we feeling to make it to championship weekend?
We are tired. We are tired. But, you know, like, what a year. It's been so fun to travel every single weekend. Like, that's something that people dream about, and I got to do it. And I don't take 1 minute of it for granted. And I said I was going to go to 14 straight games, and I did that. And then I was like, why not throw in the SEC Championship too? So we'll make it 15. Barring something insane happening in the college football playoff rankings, I will be heading up a home playoff game. And then my travels will probably cease just because of holidays and stuff like that. But really grateful for this year, and I'm just really honored that people cared enough to follow along the journey.
I didn't prep you for this, but is there a location that sticks out to you, or we want to save that for another week? Do we need time to think about it, Joy, or does it just automatically jump off the page?
I mean, I think I said when I started this that I would always take LSU out of the equation when it came to like this conversation, because I'm biased and I think it's the best environment in college football. I only went to one place twice this year, and that was Georgia. And I just think, like, from top to bottom, it's just a class A experience. It's an incredible facility. It's incredible tailgating. It's awesome people. It's good football. Like, there's not one part of the experience that ever falls short for me. And so I'm going to go tailgate with those people again on Saturday and get in one more good old Morsall tailgate before it's all over. But yeah, I think it's hard for me to compare anything to LSU. I think it's always at the top, but Georgia has been incredible for multiple seasons, not just this year.
So. You're not helping me with that take and that sweatshirt. You're not helping me tamp down Craig's Joy as a dog fan narrative, but we'll see what we can do. Okay.
Speaking of championship, Joy is a
tiger. We think that's probably never going to change. All right. It's championship weekend. There's a lot of things going on. We are recording, as always, on Friday morning. We've got a couple of, Fly Like a G6 champ games today to determine who's going to get in from in that G5 spot. And then tomorrow, on Saturday, we have a lot happening. Sunday night, we will obviously be recapping this. But for the sake of the greater argument, Joy, why is this weekend important? There is a growing narrative, I think, that I would like to put to bed that championship weekend needs to go away and that championship games don't matter. I think from a monetary standpoint, they're never going anywhere. But that aside, from a traditionalist standpoint, I love these games. I love what they mean. And if the fans are ignored in this process of the evolution of the college football game, we're going to continue to lose what makes it so special. And part of that is championship weekend. What are your thoughts on the value of this weekend?
Yeah, I love championship weekend. I would say that I don't hear, if I'm being really honest, I don't hear a lot of complaints about these games from people that are legitimate fans. I mainly hear them from casuals, and I would say that to their faces. I think it's really easy when you don't have any pride in the conference that you play in. I think that's the thing that makes the SEC so special. We hear about it all along. Like, we're too prideful and we're arrogant and we think everything's about us and we think we're the best conference. And the reality is we are the best conference. You can look at history to see that. But I think there is a level of pride, especially in the SEC, about representing this conference at the highest level of collegiate athletics. I think this goes for more than just football. I think all around in all of our sports, the SEC thrives on being the best at everything they do. It's why the SEC baseball tournament is such a big deal in Hoover every year. It's why the NCAA tournament, is lackluster in comparison to basketball, because we love watching SEC basketball. It's everything that the SEC does is at the top of its craft. And I think the SEC championship is the picture of that. So I would say for any other fans of any other conferences, get some pride. Like, we care about this game because we care about this conference, and we've all invested time and money and energy into making this conference what it is. And so this weekend will always mean something to fans that are actually invested in the product that the SEC produces every year.
Yep. I agree. And I think that, you know, this year specifically, my predictions did not come true. I had LSU and Ole Miss in the SEC championship game, and I was almost right on half of them. But what we're getting,
thank God you weren't.
What we're getting is probably the what has become known as the most traditional matchup in this game between Georgia and Alabama. What would you say, though, Joy, to the people who say we need to add games to this weekend? You know, this year doesn't necessarily set up in this way, and maybe it would for teams like Texas and Vanderbilt, but last year is definitely a lot more of a clear-cut picture where you could have had a Texas and Georgia championship game and then had to play in games that involved Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And the winners of those Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Tennessee games would have then gotten the next two spots into the playoff. This year maybe doesn't set up as well for that, but if we were to write that into the structure, is that a positive? What is that? How does that change the overall makeup of what Saturday on championship weekend would look like across the SEC landscape?
The only thing that I struggle when it comes to like any kind of additional games, like, I think we're kind of at the height of games per season. One thing that isn't considered a lot in this is like the health of these athletes and like how much more work and effort these guys are having to put in week after week. People are always going to say it, but like, is more football ever a bad thing? I think it's only a bad thing if it comes to like really damaging the health of the athletes. And I think that's something we should probably take into consideration. I know us as fans, we're always like more football. But the reality is like these guys want to do this for a very long time. Football is not a long game in terms of career wise. And so I think that's something we also need to take into consideration.
No, I agree with you there as well. And I think that we can sit here and talk about safety all day and all night, but we know that as much as that comes out of the talking heads and the mouths of the people that are in charge, there's one driving force behind everything, and that's money. And what would make more money than putting two more premier matchups on championship weekend that have high stakes with the playoff on the line? Really, what I think happens is we're going to go to 16 teams in the playoff, and then we're not going to necessarily need play-in games to that level, because you're going to get all these teams in anyway. Vanderbilt and Texas would both be in a 16-team playoff.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And that would be a clear cutoff for the SEC. All right. Let's tee it up, because we're always going to make a prediction here and look back and see, were we right? Were we wrong? Was our take spot on? Did we give a great hot take, or was it as freezing as the Antarctic? You tell me. Georgia, Alabama, who wins it this weekend?
I hate this. Like, this is just the freaking worst. I am going to have to go with history, and so because of that, I have to take Alabama. I, as an LSU fan, despise making that choice, but I think this game is so mental at this point that until Georgia really, like, proves to me that they can get over the hump and consistently beat Alabama – I went out on a limb this year when Georgia played Bama at Georgia, and I think I picked Georgia. And
you did.
Yeah. And then that came back to bite me. So I think you have to be realistic and aware of reality. And so I'm going to pick Alabama and hope that I'm wrong.
So we haven't done this a lot this year, but I'm going to agree with you, because for a lot of the same reasons. But if we really get into the X's and the O's of it, I think that Georgia's defense has played better as the season has gone on. But we had Jonathan Smith on a few weeks ago to kind of help us break that down. And the lack of a pass rush specialist, not having somebody who's designated in that role. Craig is calling me. Craig, I'm busy. I'll call you back later. Not having That's designated pass rusher. And the depth at safety is also a question mark. They have played better later in the season, but part of that was Charlotte and Georgia Tech. So we'll see exactly what that looks like against this Alabama offense that I think has the potential to be one of the best offenses in the country if you can get some running game. If we see any semblance of a running game, that clears things up, and Ty Simpson's going to pick you apart because he's got weapons out there and he's accurate with the football. Right. So we'll see what happens. Joy, have a great time. Enjoy your last big Georgia tailgate of the year, even though you just said Roll Tide. All right, we're going to get out of here.
Those words.
We're going to get out of here, and we'll be right back on SEC Sunday night.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team!
Oh, man! The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up?
Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. Again, I am Rob Williams, and he is Craig McMichael, and we are back here with you, as always, following the SEC Pretty Campus Tour with Daily Joy, who was with us there live at the SEC Championship game this weekend. As you can see, Craig, our freezing cold takes of the week. Joy and I both picked Alabama in that segment.
What a casual take.
I think I picked with my heart a little bit there. Lesson learned. A couple of takeaways here really quickly before we pull Tony in, and he is here with us and ready to go, by the way. Mm-hmm. Two things that I would say from the SEC Championship game.
Yep.
Georgia's defense is absolutely peaking at the right time. We talked again with Jonathan a couple of weeks ago. You just heard it in the segment with Joy about the lack of a designated pass rusher, the depth at safety being a question mark. But we can see kind of they're picking it up right here when they need to pick it up as we enter college football playoff time. And then the other thing on the flip side, as we see Alabama matched up now with Oklahoma in the rematch in Norman, is that the Tide still struggle to find some semblance of a run game. And I think if we look at the two teams, Georgia peaking on defense, Bama struggling to find a run game, it was a recipe that gave us a little bit of a blowout there in Atlanta.
And if you take a look at it, like, John, you know, our buddy John Smith and all of our Georgia fans were worried. I talked about it, right? Like, I picked Georgia, But what did I say? I was Michael Scott. I was ready to be hurt again. But what you saw from the start, Georgia didn't play tight. Georgia didn't play scared. They came out and they attacked. They blocked that punt early. They had an interception a couple of drives after that. They were up 14-0, and they were cooking. You know, Alabama's top two running backs were out. They haven't had a running game all season. Yet they still finished the game with minus 3 yards, the lowest since 1940. Here's the best one. Our buddy Dr. J. Will does a fantastic job at Sports Illustrated. Key number for the Georgia defense, 8. One of the biggest challenges Georgia has had against Alabama the last few years is getting off the damn field on third down. We can look at Jalen Milroe a couple years ago in the SEC Championship, last year in Tuscaloosa, this year in Athens. Alabama paid their rent continually converting third downs or converting easy fourth downs. 8 of the 11 Alabama drives go 4 plays or less. So Georgia's defense is absolutely peaking. Georgia has now won 3 of the last 5 SEC championships. I guess the whole SEC least narrative and the fact that we don't have divisions isn't bothering Kirby. I have some questions about, you know, Joy and me being a casual fan on the future of conference championships. But rather than address those now, I would rather have Uncle Tony join us so that we can talk about the bracket. But, you know, first and foremost, let me just say this. Georgia is peaking and firing in all cylinders. And, you know, Kirby is focused and locked in. That, to me, tells us we're in for a long, deep playoff run.
I think that it does as well. And as we continue this conversation, let's welcome in managing editor at Last Word on College Football, Tony Siracusa, who has given us quite the platform over the years. And really, his belief in us is why we're sitting here on this platform today. And, Tony, we want to welcome you in.
Thanks, guys. As we break down
not just the SEC, but this is the point of the year where we have to go outside of the league. Sure. I will sit here and tell you that this is the greatest conference in the sport. and I think the playoff committee shows us that by putting 5 teams into the field. And it would have been 7 if we get the 16-team playoff field that we all believe we're headed towards.
Right.
Almost 50% of the field, Tony. I think that speaks for itself. But as we bring you in tonight.
Hot air in here.
As we bring you in tonight. Let's take a look at the national landscape. You were, you've had the availability in these press conferences and an opportunity to hear directly from Hunter Yurecek on what the mindset of the committee has been. First of all, it's great to see you. How are you? And secondly, I
got a question though. Before you get into this, I've got a very serious question. Your backdrop, Rob, makes sense. You got the SEC stuff back there. You got a picture back there. I'm curious about Brother Craig here.
Pinky's up, baby. I'm a little artistic, a little fun. We've had the Guinness poster. It's still a work in progress of what the hell the actual background is going to be. So, what we're doing is just trying to get a vibe out there.
Okay. Because I thought what was happening so far tonight was, you were like in a restaurant and you'd walk down one of those hallways on the way to the men's room where they throw up just something on the wall and you decide to sit down there and do the show.
You know, that could happen as well. So what you're saying is maybe this is not the background that we need. Maybe we need to maybe update or change it a little bit.
Well, maybe something with a little more content to it, a little bit more complexity, a little bit more content to it. Brother Rob's got his down. All good.
Can I say in the 3 years that I've written for Last Word, I don't think you have ever given me any notes on any of my articles asking for a little complexity or a little something more. I think if anything, you're like, Craig, we got to rein it in just this a little bit.
Usually that's the case. Usually I'm like, Craig, dude, dial it down a little bit.
Tony, when you look at the committee, when you look at the committee, Tony, you know, there's nothing that we can say that's going to appease everybody. And I think that has to be the mindset of Hunter Yurecek when he goes on the air and talks about decisions made. There are going to be people who can sort of agree with him. There's going to be a lot of people who always disagree with no matter what decisions are made in the current format and setup that we have.
Right.
What do you see as the things that stick out as the major concerns or maybe votes of confidence one way or the other, but what are the things that just jump off the page when you're sitting in this press conference and you've been doing this for a long time and you've been in a lot of press conferences, you've heard from a lot of athletic directors, officials, coaches, players, whatever it may be. Sure. In this particular case, what jumps off the page to you?
First thing that jumps off the page to me is I now understand why Arkansas is in the deep hot mess that it's in if Hunter Yurecek is running their athletic department.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Stan, he had to take over from Mac Rhodes about halfway through the process when Mac Rhodes had to step down. I don't imagine we will see Hunter Yurecek as the face of the committee next year either. I was on the conference call this afternoon with Yurecek and some other members of the national media after all of this was done and after all this was released. And I think I now understand last week's conference call a little bit better. My criticism of them last week was they were just so opaque about all of the answers. They were so non-committal about everything. And I now realize it really was to give themselves that extra, whatever it is, 4 or 5 days of wiggle room to essentially do whatever the hell they wanted with regards to moving teams around. I've come to the conclusion that these weekly calls, we have, 4 or 5 of them before we get to the final selection, they're pretty useless. They really are, because the explanations that we were given in week one are now different in week five. The biggest thing that comes to mind is the rationalization in the Miami/Notre Dame issue. And look, I wind up thinking they kept saying we're not worried about head to head between Miami and Notre Dame. Miami beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame's 2 losses in the first 2 weeks of the season were qualitatively better than Miami's 2 losses. I mean, they lost to 2 teams who were ranked. They lost to Miami and Texas A&M. But the head-to-head, they kept saying, doesn't matter because there are all these other teams in between them. Okay, well, then what you expect is at some point there won't be teams in between them. So what did they do? BYU loses the conference championship game, and they didn't look good. BYU didn't even come close to looking good. BYU has 2 losses. Alabama lost its conference championship game.
Also didn't look good.
Also didn't look good. Has 3 losses. But what we did is and Alabama didn't move. Alabama's in the same spot. Didn't move even with the conference loss. But they dropped BYU out after losing to what is essentially now, the number 3 team. And all of a sudden, there's no buffer between Miami and Notre Dame. Now we can compare the head-to-head, and we jump Miami over Notre Dame when Miami didn't play, Notre Dame didn't play. The teams that were in that buffer zone between them had nothing to do with Miami's schedule this year or Notre Dame's schedule this year. So their losses should not have impacted the view at all. And Yurecek told us, he actually told the committee to go back and rewatch the Notre Dame versus Miami game. Wow, hang on a second. So if we're in a court of law and the trial has been going on for a month, all of a sudden we're going to go back and relitigate the first week of the trial, of the case. I don't understand how you do that. And I'm not defending Notre Dame. I'm really not even defending Miami. I have an issue with the system and the way the system works. And you guys know, because you've heard me say it before, my biggest problem is with the committee. I don't like the committee at all. I don't like the committee because I don't want active athletic directors on the committee. Your job from, sorry for the extraneous noise, the kittens have decided to come in here and decide it's playtime to be a part of your show.
We're pro animal, so if they want to make an appearance, we're all for it.
They're like domestic terrorists, frankly. But look, your job from Monday through Thursday is to take care of the women's water polo program and the men's tennis team and the gymnastics team and basketball. And then you get on a plane on Friday and fly to Texas, sit in the room and watch some basketball or watch some football, you know, with your committee members there, get on the plane Sunday and leave Grapevine and go back to whatever school you work at. No, man, that's not good enough. It's not good enough. You guys know how much football we watch at Last Word, yep. Right? We've joked about it because of the committees I'm on and the votes and whatever else I've got to do. I've got 17 to 18 games every weekend that are recorded on top of what I cover live or watch live or whatever. And if you're not sitting there watching at least that much, I don't want you on the committee. If you're not doing it every day as part of your role on the, I don't want you on the committee. I don't want any current athletic directors on the committee.
And the chair of this committee, in addition to women's water polo, men's mm-hmm. tennis, gymnastics, et cetera, was hiring a football coach,
right.
and managing a basketball team, which I've said before, is coached by John Calipari, which right. always comes with its own fun, we'll call right. it. So
hang on, I got a question.
I agree with you, Tony. Absolutely no way this is possible to do this well.
No. One serious question. Where the hell do I get an athletic director job where I only work Monday through Thursday? Because that is not what I'm experiencing.
Yeah, I know. I've seen how late you turn your articles in. Yeah. I'm aware. But at least you're working real hours, and we're pleased about that. Look, and I get that from a technical standpoint, BYU yeah. didn't really drop, but everything around them shifted after the loss, and that buffer zone was gone. And there's a lot of blame to go around. You got to blame the ACC. If the ACC's tiebreaker system wasn't so patently absurd and we had to go to level 5 to break up this four-way tie in second place, the reality is Miami would have been playing Virginia Saturday night in Charlotte, and whoever wins goes, and we're all fine with that. We're all good with that. But Miami's sitting at home watching an 8-5 Duke team out there take down Virginia in overtime, and you know, listening to Manny Diaz afterwards explain why Duke belonged in the playoff, and you've reached this whole other level of absurdity. So you blame the ACC, you blame the committee, because they're throwing in parameters that didn't exist 5 days ago, right. And it's messed up. But I'm going to tell you, the bottom line is, we all know where this goes next year.
No expansion. Championship games.
Expansion.
No, but I'm gonna talk to the casual fan comment that our friend talked about, which was in poor taste. I want to actually have a serious conversation about conference championships. Brooks Austin, who covers Georgia, brought up a really good point today, and that I really liked. And I think this is how I'm going to set up my question. Which precedent does Ohio State being at 2 and Georgia being at 3 set? Conference title losses don't matter, or conference title wins don't matter? Because I'm trying to figure out, and this is my question. My friend Rob is all hot and bothered. Joy was hot and bothered about me saying that conference championships don't matter. I understand the cultural significance and the monetary significance of the SEC championship. It makes a hell of a lot of sense. But as an incentive for a football program, where last year for Georgia, you have your starting quarterback, Carson Beck, get knocked out, and then Gunnar Stockton has to come in, not sure that that's a great idea. Somehow, Alabama, and probably with the influence of Alabama Jones and Nick Saban, doesn't drop at all after losing the SEC championship. When again, we have precedent, multiple years, Georgia and Alabama both have dropped when they have lost in the SEC championship, yet they don't at all. Where's the incentive to be playing in these games? It only can hurt you unless you have Jimmy Sexton and the CAA influencing ESPN.
I think a couple of things. One, there is the concept that the conference championship games exist for the revenue, and I mostly agree with that. But you know, it was interesting. I was talking to someone in the ACC commissioner's office last night when I was in the press box in Charlotte, and he said, "Yes, I understand that. But there's only one conference that's making money off the conference championship game. It's the SEC. Big Ten is breaking even, and the ACC loses money most years. The ACC is holding it in one of the biggest NFL stadiums in the country in terms of seating capacity. And, you know, they get 50%, you know, ticket revenue.
There wasn't a large Duke contingent that filled half the stadium last night?
It was actually a bigger crowd than it was last year, because last year was SMU and, you know, the trip from Dallas.
Fair.
Although the SMU fan base is, you know, really wealthy overall, because this was a drivable game.
When we get a Cal-Stanford ACC championship game, I think it'll fill up, Tony.
Absolutely. I'll be there. But look, so the idea of, well, it's for the money. Well, it's for the money for the SEC. Yep. And certainly we know Greg Sankey's clout and whatnot. So I think if we expand the playoffs, which I'm against, because there aren't 12 teams that can win the national championship right now. So why are we going to go to 16 teams when there aren't 16 teams that can win the national championship? But if we do that, we have to adjust the calendar. You absolutely have to. You're going to have to start the season earlier, and you are eventually going to have to get rid of the conference championship games, because you can't be playing the playoffs and the national championship game in the second week of February.
Nope.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not possible. One of the things that got brought up over, I guess it was Friday, and I was at the coaches press conference for the ACC championship, and, you know, Tony Elliott was there, and Manny Diaz, they were there, not together, at separate interview times. Manny Diaz brought up the point that, and it sounds like it gets off the subject a little bit, but it really addresses what Craig is talking about with the conference championship games, that the biggest problem with college football and getting this right and making the changes is the calendar. And that you've got, and this was his quote, you've got to stop treating the sport like it's a one semester sport. Like everything happens within, because it doesn't anymore. Again, the national championship game is what, third week of January? Every school is in their second semester by then. It starts in some cases before school even starts in August. Make the calendar adjustment so you're not treating this, because, and again, it's not what I'm here to talk about. It impacts the high school recruiting. It impacts the portal. It impacts everything and why we do the things when we do them. The playoffs are going to expand. The steps that occurred today and over the last week with who's in and who's out, guarantee it's going to expand. The deadline to present the new format to the TV partners was December 1st. The committee gave itself, and the SEC and the Big Ten and the Power Four conferences gave themselves another 5 weeks because they didn't have the plan ready. Hey, what a coincidence. You gave yourselves more time, as everyone is now saying, how did this team get left out? How did that team get left out? And so by the end of January for next year, we will have a plan to expand. I don't think there's any question.
Tony,
you think?
Go ahead, Craig.
Do you think the committee were cowards and were afraid of Greg Sankey's? I sound tongue in cheek and like I'm being a bit of a goofball, but was there a fear of upsetting Greg Sankey and the SEC by kicking out Alabama and only having four teams in, bringing in an independent Notre Dame that has looked a hell of a lot better in the last 5 weeks than Alabama has? Like, is there a wrath there that they didn't want to deal with, that Hunter Yurecek didn't want to deal with?
Afraid of Greg Sankey is a little strong for me. I don't know if they, you know, I'm not going to say they feared retribution as committee members or whatever, because they've all got a contract. They're in for 2 year cycles and they get rotated out and replaced by somebody else. But are they aware of Greg Sankey's input over the system? Yes, absolutely. No question about it. We all are, you know. You know, I live this 24/7, and, you know, it's funny because tomorrow night, Monday night, you know, you guys know what night that is, the Nagurski Awards, and I'll, look a lot more presentable than being in a sweatshirt and whatever as I go represent the Football Writers Association there. But, it's, we actually joked about it. It's like, oh, look, we got an SEC person in there. Greg Sankey will be happy, you know, among the four finalists. And, you know, we're not serious, but everybody knows, you know, the Sankey's clout, Sankey's pull. So I don't want to say they were afraid, but are they aware of his level of authority? Sure. Because who isn't? We are.
Tony, let me sneak one more in here before we get you out of here. And everybody on X, everybody watching us right now, everybody on YouTube, everybody that has anything to do with college football complains about this committee and has issues with the current format and the way things are set up. In your estimation, we continue to see changes across the landscape of the sport. What are the solutions to find a better way to select the teams that can actually go and compete for a college football playoff championship?
Well, look, I think you have to accept the fact that this is not going to always be equitable and even, because the sport isn't equitable and even. They want to include the group of five conferences, because if you don't, then the Power Four schools need to stop playing them. They need to stop scheduling, you know, these third week of November SEC cupcake games, and stop doing it and let the group of five go play for their own championship, which I do not advocate. But what I'm saying is, if you're not going to include them in this, then stop scheduling them and let them go off on their own. There isn't always going to be an equitable solution or an even solution. But I think you either need more transparency from the committee on a regular basis, and a half hour phone call on Tuesday nights, four weeks in a row, isn't enough. You need to see the work product. You need to go back to fourth grade math, show your work, right? We want to see it. And because these guys just sitting in a lounge watching some TVs and eating their wings and coming up with this solution isn't good enough. So I think there needs to be an overhaul of the committee and the type of people that are on the committee. And I think there needs to be more transparency from the committee as we move forward.
Yeah, I like that idea. And I think, you know, my standpoint is that we need to to continue to create a measurable standard in some way, shape, or form. You're right. It's difficult to do, but it's done with larger fields for sports like basketball. And I think if we can increase the measurable and maybe decrease the power of the committee, I think that probably puts us in a little better spot too, because it is such a variable to put these human opinions, let's be honest, at the forefront year after year.
The basketball committee has specific metrics that they tell you that they follow. Yep. And they're not always right. And it's a 68-team field, and the 69th and 70th teams complain. We're always going to have that, except it learned to live with it, whatever. But they'll tell you about the metrics that they follow to get.
I would love metrics. I would love some better metrics.
These guys are way too conceptual about the work.
Absolutely.
So I have a question. Rob, can you put up the bracket for us?
Yeah, I have it.
Yep. So looking at the bracket, Tony, when you look at those first round, is that exciting? Is there a miss? Would you have made any updates or any changes?
It's exciting.
Keep the teams in there. But okay, looking at the numbers and looking at, we've got a couple of rematches already.
Sure.
Would you change things around?
But your question is it exciting? It's exciting for me because I'm the guy who's going to watch the Cure Bowl and the LA Bowl and every other bowl. So sure, it's exciting. Look, James Madison is going to get, you know, just abused by Oregon. But where else do you put James Madison? They belong in there. If you're not going to put the ACC,
leave him at home with Billy. Leave him at home with Billy.
Well, because then who are you going to put in?
Notre Dame.
Okay, that's fine. But the committee's already said Notre Dame can't go in.
I know.
So yeah, Notre Dame has now taken their ball and gone home and won't even play in a bowl game. They're refusing that now.
Which is an absolutely ridiculous decision, I just have to say, because we're going to run out of time at some point on this show with the 1,000 talking points that we have and guests coming on after this.
Are we starting this now? Are we waiting to throw the gas on this match for me to go off about the fact that Marcus
Freeman and this program have decided that they don't actually like the sport and would like to go home and not play it anymore? I don't understand the decision-making. It's not competitive. It's not preparing you for next year. You're going to get 15 extra practices. If we're so concerned about the future, then go practice and get ready for next year. Are you planning on the entire roster leaving via the transfer portal and you don't need to practice with these players?
I agree with you, Rob, and then there's this. Notre Dame is already in possession of a memorandum of understanding for next year and going forward. All they have to do is finish in the top 12 and they're guaranteed a playoff spot, period. Doesn't matter how they got there. So now next year you're going to have the committee looking for ways to try and keep Notre Dame out of the top 12 so they don't have to deal with it. I think it was a petulant decision. Look, the Miami Texas A&M game, it'll be all right. A&M is gonna beat them. Tulane stands a chance against Ole Miss. Alabama, Oklahoma,
34-0 earlier this season, Tony. 34-0.
Yeah, I know. I saw
the round matchups.
Tulane's a better team now than they were then, and Ole Miss is in a state of flux. Alabama, Oklahoma, that's fine. It's that the next round of the game, so it's going to be really good. Texas Tech versus Oregon is going to be an amazing game to watch.
Alabama, Oklahoma, first one to 13 wins because neither offense can do a damn thing.
I think that's about right.
True. That's not true. I think that matchup between
that's not true.
The matchup between Grubb and Venables will be very interesting because Ty Simpson and that offense have done plenty against other teams this year. It's just They got the best of them last time when they were in Norman. That doesn't mean it happens again.
Last time they played in Tuscaloosa, my friend, three picks.
Yeah, Ty Simpson hasn't looked good the past couple of weeks. He hasn't looked consistent at all the past.
I'm still waiting to hear more of that John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle love. We heard it so much in September, and then ever since he got a boo boo on his finger, that has gone away.
Oh, a boo boo on his finger! The man had to have surgery on his throwing hand.
How's your
throwing hand, Craig?
Listen, as you can see, both pinkies don't connect anymore to the hand that we have broken both of them. And I am not making the U for my boy Carson Beck. Here is the challenge. Rob and I both agree that Friday night window slot is important. Mm-hmm. But that 3:30 on Saturday and the 7:30 Saturday night are important. Correct. I do wonder if that is a miss. Having Miami and Texas A&M not playing either at that 3:30 or that 7:30 slot, if again viewers and eyeballs are important, So like you,
they are, but I also think you have to take where the calendar, where we're playing these games, and separate it from what we're used to with the regular season calendar, because it's the holidays, people are off, people are taking more time off, their life schedule is different. So I don't think it's a comparative to what we're used to judging a Friday night or Saturday midday or Saturday afternoon game on. I don't think it's the same comparative.
Is there any issue if we have these games this weekend versus having to wait another weekend? You know, again, talking about speeding up the calendar.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Yeah, I'd be fine with it. They're always gonna blend in and fight for eyes with the bowl games as long as we have this system anyway. And I am not in favor of getting rid of the bowl games because they mean too much money to the municipalities that host them, with tourism dollars and restaurants and hotels and whatever. You named them on Sunday, put the teams on a plane on Thursday, and you know,
you can do
send
it.
Them off. Yeah.
And Capital One Bowl week is Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And then you have the playoff game Saturday and Sunday. Don't worry about that other league.
Right.
Great stuff as always from managing editor Tony Siracusa, who gave me and Craig a leg up to put us right here where we are. So we're forever grateful for your grand wisdom and expertise and your support, and you're welcome here anytime, Tony. We look forward to continued coverage of the college football playoff at Last Word.
Thanks, man. You guys have more than earned your what you've got here. So you've done good work, and you've more than earned your way through.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Bye, Tony.
Make sure you follow along at Last Word on Sports and Last Word on College Football for more continued coverage, except for that guy that covers the Heisman. He kind of sucks. All right. Now, as we continue this conversation, it's me now. It's not you anymore. As we continue this conversation, we're going to shift the narrative a little bit. As we look from one year to the next, we've got an interesting development that is not bowl related, not college football playoff related. It's actually in the courtroom. And for this battle royale between Georgia and Missouri, we're going to bring in our favorite Missouri Tiger, Maggie Johnson, host of Mizzou That's Who, to duke it out with Craig here as we look at this lawsuit between the two schools over Damon
Why
Wilson.
Can't and the, we quote unquote, be friends?
Before you start, I don't even know who Rob is right now. Where'd all your hair go?
It fell off. I'm not.
I know you're
sure.
Like in 1994. You look like a 2000 baby now.
He's SEC pretty now, Maggie. Come on now.
That's true.
Got his SEC pretty makeover. He's all set.
I actually let my 4-year-old daughter shave it because she said that it was too soft and she wanted my face to be scratchy again. So here we are. 5 o'clock shadow incoming.
Do what your kids want.
Yep. You got it. What's going on? How are you? How's it going now that we're into basketball season in Como? And
well, we lost by 20 to Kansas today.
Catching L's.
Not going well.
I was getting there.
It's frustrating because for people, not that they're newer to the sport, but people that didn't know Mizzou when they were in the Big 12, like Kansas and Mizzou is a massive rivalry. It's one of the oldest rivalries in all of sports. It's older than the Deep South's oldest rivalry. It's definitely older than Ohio State, Michigan, older than the Iron Bowl. I think it's 1891. It was our first football game played, and we've been playing basketball since then too. So, and it's a little bit more of a rivalry even in basketball. But yeah, it sucks having a rival that's a blue blood. I don't know if y'all are familiar, but it's never fun. And we beat Kansas last year, so I knew they were going to come out heavy this year.
We have a rival that claims to be a new blue blood, but I'm not really ready to acknowledge that yet. And
what about Bleeding Kansas from the football. 1840s? Remember that?
You don't want to get into this history lesson with me because I'll school you pretty hard.
Did you know I used to teach the Civil War? And so this is the best part. When I taught the mm-hmm. Civil War and we talked about the causes of the Civil War, mm-hmm. I would quote the great poet T. Swift And I would play the song. I would say, gentlemen, band-aids don't fix bullet holes. You say sorry just for sure. For show.
For show.
And it would be great because all of the little issues in 1850, they put little band-aids over the bullet holes and it doesn't fix anything. And there's plenty between Missouri and Kansas. So we could go all night on this, Maggie. And and the viewership would go like this, I'm sure.
I know. People would get so bored. But I will say, if anybody that says we're not SEC, just take a little history lesson.
little history lesson.
Okay, so we... In the spirit of a civil war, we do have SEC on SEC crime here that's made its way to the courtroom in the case.
No, drink got paid. We're all set.
Damon Wilson. Georgia suing the former Bulldog, who is now a Missouri Tiger, for damages after transfer and a little confusion in terms of, did we get paid and not play? But wait a minute. It's not pay for play. It's NIL, right? So what's the perspective on two sides of the fence here? Because I think this is bigger than just Georgia and Missouri. This is something that we've seen at several programs where players mm-hmm. have done deals, signed some type of quote-unquote contract, but we can't really hold them to these contracts because then they're employees and they're not amateurs, and on that rabbit hole goes. But then they leave the school having already been paid some level of funds. And it varies from team to team, player to player, how much money has been paid out at the point that the player stops playing for team A and moves to team B. But now we have Georgia taking it to court. What do we think about this case specifically? But then how does this impact the NIL, college football transfer portal at large? Because just like anything else, just like we've seen with bowl opt-outs from teams already today, when one thing happens, sometimes it kind of tends to spiral on us and slide downhill.
I get what Georgia's trying to do. I kind of even respect what Georgia's trying to do a little bit. You know, I do think that players shouldn't be able to collect money and leave. And let me just tell you right now, this happened to Mizzou last year. Williams Wanieri, one of the top recruits in the country, came to Mizzou for a year, you know, got some money and then left. So it's not like this hasn't happened to Missouri. I get it. Also want to make it clear that, and you did say this, but people have been trying to make this like a Georgia versus Missouri thing. This isn't a Georgia versus Missouri thing. This is a Georgia versus a singular player thing. So Mizzou's like in the clear regardless. I think that he came, got the type of NIL deal that he wanted with Mizzou. And I think he was shopping himself out. I do think that he knew that clause was likely in his contract, but that they wouldn't hold, you know, they wouldn't hold him to it. I think I told you earlier, Rob, I don't agree with the thing where it's either you stay here for your entire career or you have to pay out this contract. I think that that's kind of ridiculous. I do think that you should have to give that money back that you took. And even if there's a little bit more of a repercussion for what you're doing, but you look at schools like Georgia and you look at schools like Bama and you think, yeah, this is where I want to be. This is the creme de la creme. This is the hot spot. And then you're like, wait, but I could go somewhere else and make an impact immediately and be this type of player and get developed. I understand why I want to enter the portal for that reason. It's just a hard place to be because I don't think that they should have to pay that much money that they didn't get. I don't think Georgia was hurt. I truly don't believe that Georgia not having that money hurt them at all. Especially because he left 4 days into the portal being open. There were still 2 more weeks left. They had plenty of time to go out there and find somebody. The issue is, and what a lot of fans are saying, is they didn't have time to go out and find the players that they want. Georgia's kind of known for tampering. Like, they are kind of known for tampering. They've tampered with Dominic Lovett from the University of Missouri.
He was looking for an upgrade. He wanted to come play with Carson.
Craig.
Oh, the silence means I was right.
You just know it's not true when you look at Dominic Lovett's numbers from Missouri to Georgia. You just know it's not true. And I mean,
his numbers weren't great at Georgia. Like they were okay, but I always like wanted more. Like I kept like because yeah. I looked at his numbers at
production
Missouri.
is a great point in that argument.
His numbers at Georgia were never as good as they were at Missouri. Now he played in the slot. And Luther Burden was coming in to play in the slot. So, I mean, you kind of understand, like, I don't know if he can move to the outside and be successful. But regardless, it's not like Georgia gave all this money to a player and then couldn't use it to get another player. they had that money still. That money was still in the collective.
Didn't
have that money.
Didn't you see what happened in signing day this week? They lost that Jared Curtis fella to Vandy. Like, all of that money that went away, like, they just didn't have any money and ended up number six. So, I mean,
that would be absurd. That would be absurd if that claim was actually made in court. Can we imagine if some attorney is arguing in the courtroom and they blame Jared Curtis on Damon Wilson?
Look, I can't.
I saw some Georgia people being like, well, what if they knew he was going to play there and they already made a bunch of t-shirts and they lost money on that? I'm like, that didn't happen.
Is that the way NIL works? Is it all t-shirts? Is it all?
Yeah. Okay. I'm like, that didn't happen.
That's so, how they were dreaming about it back in the day before we got it approved as what it is now.
I think that players need to be smarter. They need to have smarter people in their corners, because we're talking about like a 20, 21 year old kid that's signing these contracts too. And they're coming, and I don't know his home situation, but a lot of these players are coming from homes that have never seen that type of money before in their life. So they're like, oh, this seems like a good idea. 14 months contract seems like a good idea. And then they're like, well, maybe it's not in my best interest. So they need to figure out a way that these players are held accountable without strongholding them into staying at their location. Because if coaches don't have to stay, if all this other stuff goes on, these players shouldn't have to stay. It's at the end of the day, they are student athletes and they should be able to transfer and go to another school. There should be regulations.
What if the coach, why is it as simple as a monthly payment plan, though? If we're going to sign a however many month contract, why can't we just say you? And when you decide to leave, the rest of it's gone. Like you don't get the remainder of the contract. That makes the most sense to me.
Especially if you're performing the duties that are under that contract. Now, obviously, he signed. He only got his first one, and he didn't do that. But if you're there for six months, and you're doing work for those 6 months and fulfilling those duties that you have, why are you then expected to pay for duties that you haven't yet performed?
Here's the problem.
Did you see how much he got in that 1 month, though? $30,000. Can you imagine if you made $30,000 in 1 month? I would be okay. I would stay at Georgia.
Here's the issue, though. Listen. We can do that month-to-month thing for rev share. But it doesn't work for NIL because as the rules are currently constructed, they are constructed under the guise that this is real NIL and not pay for play. And so if it's real NIL, then your name is still just as valuable no matter where you are. You still have the same recognition. And so therefore you're getting paid for your name and what you've already accomplished and what has made you the quote unquote famous person that you are, where you're going to have influence. You're not getting paid to play the rest of the games or to show up for the rest of the games. So
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
So when and if we move to true pay for play, which it already functions that way, it's just not written that way in the legal books, then there's a spiral of other things that are going to happen, and they haven't figured out the back end yet, because then these players become real employees, and in some cases state employees, and it just becomes a whole mess down the line.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, Rob, everything you just said doesn't matter. The College Sports Commission doesn't matter.
Of course it doesn't.
Cody Campbell spent $25 million, and now Texas Tech is reaping the benefits. Look at all of the hoopla over that guy in Oxford who likes to do hot yoga. Everybody's offer was $25 million in NIL. Alex Golsh is getting $30 million in NIL at Auburn. Matt Campbell, who doesn't have a recruiting class, is getting $30 million at...
He
better have it at Penn State. But, like, that's the thing is, like, it's just, like, these are the contracts. It's not like the NFL. It's not like the coaches. There's still a buyout there. But, like, this is where Maggie and I actually agree. We were chatting about it a little bit last night. We're not arguing. This isn't Drink, going to Auburn or Drink going to Florida.
which you were
wrong about. Let the kid go. Let the kid go. You paid him $30,000. Okay, he's going to Missouri now. And if I can actually use a quote, let's just follow what Kirby Smart said. That one, the ones that want to leave, we schedule them. If you run from hard in your life, you'll just find more hard. And what did Mizzou find this year? More hard. Georgia's still in the playoff. Mizzou's got to go play Virginia, and they got to look at who's wearing some jorts. No one wants to see that.
I will say, though, before we like get off that topic, Damon Wilson had a damn good season, and he built up his draft stock really high. So, I mean, did it work out? Do you know if he would have had that same success if he stayed at Georgia? Like, you don't necessarily know. I do think the timing of all of it is interesting. Because what if you have a player that transfers to, I don't know, a group of five school and maybe isn't as successful? Are you that worried about it? Like, are you trying to get that money from him? Or is it because now they know that he built up his draft stock, he's probably going to the league and he's probably going to have that money? It makes you think about those things. And it's like the timing of this is very interesting to me.
Maggie, before we get you out of here, quick thoughts on the bracket here. I'll pull it back up for us. Round one, which matchup are you most excited to watch?
Alabama, Oklahoma. That one. You know, because I know it's a rematch. I understand, but like Alabama lost that game because they turned the ball over. That's why they lost that game.
That's true.
If they don't turn the ball over in that game and they, you know, I mean, Tate Sandell, their kicker, or Oklahoma's kicker, also had a great game that day. But if you don't turn the ball over and give them the good field position, Alabama can definitely go into Oklahoma, into Norman, and win that game. Norman's not a scary, scary SEC environment. And I know because I was there like 2 weeks ago, and I know, but it's not you're not going into LSU at night. You know, or you're not going into those super scary environments. I definitely think Alabama can go into that one and win. And the other one that I'm obviously is the Texas A&M Miami game. I think the other two are.
I think Texas A&M Miami is the best game on the slate.
Who do you think has the best answers, Texas A&M or Miami?
The best dancers?
Yeah, don't answer it, Maggie.
I'm absolutely not answering that question.
There was somebody on another show that called them call boys. I don't remember who it was, but I'm calling them that exclusively from this point forward.
I just think it's weird.
They're not yell leaders, they're call boys. What, Maggie?
They want to have that weird milkman thing. That's fine. But I think it's weird
what
that
they have?
And they look like milkmen. In 2025, why they don't have cheer, like they don't also have cheerleaders.
I can't. Well, it's all weird.
We're all
but I do think that they will probably win that game depending which Carson Beck they get. All right, Maggie Johnson of Mizzou, that's who. Thanks for coming in and breaking down everything in the court of law for us. When we get back, we're going to have a much probably less serious discussion with It Just Means More Genius and a few other topics. With our friends, not just Casey, but Hoos is here too. We'll be right back after this.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team!
OTC is go.
Thank you. Go.
PTC is go.
LPS is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety con is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
It's SEC Sunday Night, presented by Hewitt Diamandouros. Visit hdlawsc.com. It's go time.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network. We have had a jam-packed show so far, and we've talked through the college football playoff. We've talked through a little bit of the SEC championship game because we don't want to leave those things unstated and unsaid as we look at actual games on the field. Before we get any further, first I'll say hi to Casey and to Hoos. Welcome in. But Craig, I have a question for you before we get to our friends and let them kind of take over. Do you know this Shrek character that's in the chat box right now, or do I need to kick him out?
I don't know.
He wanted to say hello to you. He also wanted to say that there's only 7 people viewing and that we're playing ads, and he thinks that's funny. I would like to say hello to the over 11,000 other people watching the show and goodbye to Shrek Farquaad, who's now gone from our stream. See you later. Okay. Back to the business. What's going on? How are you doing today? I hate to have you on in such a day of mourning.
I don't even know what you're talking about, man.
It's basketball season, right?
Lacrosse season is right around the corner.
Yeah, they're playing Mizzou, season, baby. Yeah, I'm doing all right. I've gotten a little better as I've gotten older at recovering from these things. I can tell you that when the game ended last night, my daughter and wife were in the living room with me, and I just stood up without saying a word and kind of walked to the other room for about 15 minutes and had a little alone time to decompress. And I kind of recovered after that, but certainly was not the ending I was hoping for last night.
Sorry, Hoos.
Listen, Virginia was playing for a spot in the college football playoff, man. Like, I can't really complain because those are not words that I imagined saying when the season began. I think, it was super fun. It was just, it's a tough end to the year. I think I don't like playing a team twice. And, we lost Cam Robinson the first time we played Duke a few weeks ago. And he's by far our best defensive player. And his absence didn't really show up against Virginia Tech because they were so bad. But if you watch the game last night, I mean, Duke just exploited the short middle of the field in their passing game. And it was a totally different game than it was 3 weeks ago. So they played better. Mensa made some throws. And we suddenly forgot how to tackle. That was probably the biggest difference in the game. But, you know, we had a chance to tie it up in overtime. And I still don't understand what happened. I don't really know why you pull out the double pass on first down in overtime. And I also don't understand why you throw it into double coverage. But I guess that's for people who make more money than me to decide.
I get it. If it makes you feel any better, Alabama doesn't like playing people twice either.
Yeah, that's right. That does not make me feel better, by the way.
Hey, I tried.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the effort, but.
We're at this point in the season again. Go ahead, Casey.
Greg texted me last night, and I was asleep. We got a new puppy, and if anybody out there that's thinking about getting a new puppy, don't. But Craig was texting me while I was trying to get my little 3 hours of sleep, and he was like, check on Hoos. So at that point, I thought the game was over. So truth be told, I checked out on our boys, but I pilled it back up when Craig sent me that text.
I did. I was looking out
just
for
in time for the double pass reverse Niner in there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was a fun comeback there. I mean, it was pretty improbable, sure was. And you know, we lost our best receiver in the fourth quarter, and so you know, the guy who caught that touchdown pass is a walk on who has like 9 career receptions, which is the most UVA thing ever. So it was really fun for a few minutes until it wasn't. It's just kind of in a nutshell what it's like being a Virginia fan and watching football games. It can be really fun in short bursts, but usually there's heartache at the end. So, the season didn't really end much differently than other seasons did for me.
Well, I would also like to say with both of you on here tonight, obviously from the MBG podcast. I had a question last week that I didn't get to address on ITG where a guy said that he watched our show and wanted to know why we had a Clemson fan on an SEC show. And I would just like to note a couple of things here. Number one, Craig and I bring enough SEC bias for anybody. And so most of the time, sometimes Craig doesn't make any sense. But most of the time we bring enough SEC bias. And so we like to bring people from other conferences in to kind of balance that out. And second of all, the MBG pod is comprised of some of our best friends in this world. And so we want to continue to have them on. And we have an incredible segment every week called It Just Means More, Genius, where we look at the fandom in the SEC and how crazy it is. With the blessings that MBG gives us on X, we pull them straight off, and we always give him credit and give you guys a shout out as well, because you are forerunners. You've gone ahead of us and continued to blaze this path of laughs and football together. And so we love closing the show with you each and every week. And I don't remember your name, I apologize, but whoever you are that asked that question last week, that's why Casey's here with us every week, and that's why we have Who's with us tonight. Let me ask an ACC question.
Let's be honest. There's a reason that
all that build up for me to land the question, just... and then you cut me off.
No, I have a bone to pick with our friend Mr. Casey. On the show last week, there was some old Miss slander about maybe like they shouldn't be in the playoff because their coach wasn't there.
Yeah, I stand on that.
They have a head coach, buddy. I don't know what you're talking about. They've got their hot yoga instructor left, but they have a head coach. Pete Golding is their head coach. Like, I don't understand where the slander is. They have an offensive coordinator. Charlie Weiss Jr. is there. And, like, maybe this is a transition of power. Maybe Who's has got to come read the segments now, because I just won't stand for that old Miss slander, my friend.
Well, you can ask Who's, Craig. I don't usually remember what I say on the show from week to week and normally contradict myself. So...
fair enough.
But I'm going to stand on this one. Yeah, I think they set the precedent with my obvious ACC bias in 2023 when Jordan Travis went down with an injury. I misspoke, or actually I let Courtney misspeak last week and said we saw them play twice. We actually only saw them play once before the committee, and they won the game. So I didn't understand. I thought the coach was worse.
Let's be honest. Lane was pretty much checked out of that Mississippi State game, and granted, it was Mississippi State. Sorry, Ryan, but you know they did win that game. So we have some data points there that show maybe Ole Miss can rise above, and then you know you can make fun of me in 2 weeks when Tulane absolutely smacks the hell out of them in Oxford. So, Rob, do you want to ask an ACC question?
Because what do we make of the ACC at this point? Being the way that the championship weekend played out. There is obviously some chatter nationally about the relevance of the ACC. There has been the question mark, obviously, in the past couple of years about Clemson and Florida State trying to get out of the ACC. If they jailbreak it, do we see that conversation coming back up? What do you guys think in terms of the future and the trajectory of the conference? Does it need to dissolve Who's as the way of the Pac-12 or whatever it was, the Tupac now as we have it? What needs
He's
to go
smarter
on?
Than me.
Needs to happen now in terms of the conference, or what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, first of all, we have some sway still, because I'm convinced the only reason Miami got in is because we lost last night. I mean, I think if we win and Duke is not the ACC, conference champion, I think Miami doesn't get in if Duke's I'm an idiot right now. I can't talk. If we win, Miami doesn't get in. And I think, that is just the way it played out. I don't see any other reason why Miami moved above Notre Dame all of a sudden. I know people talked about, Bama moved up a spot last week. I think that was just to keep Bama in. I don't think that had anything to do with Miami. And, that's kind of borne out by the fact that Alabama didn't move down at all after getting curb stomped yesterday. So, those two things I do not think are connected. So we've still got a little bit of sway. I mean, who the hell knows what's going to happen with the conferences at this point? I think saying because we had a down year that suddenly the ACC is irrelevant is silly. I mean, if it had been us playing against Miami in the ACC championship game, the narrative would be a lot different. I think it's silly that we had the tiebreakers that we did. They're nonsensical. That's the main issue. And frankly, I thought the ACC has played pretty well against SEC teams this year. I mean, Bama got in despite being blown out by a bad Florida State team. And we had a bunch of wins in there. So, you know, are we dead? No, I don't think so. Is it a viable, you know, long term? It just depends on who leaves. And, you know, all I hear from the SEC and the Big Ten is, well, we don't want any more schools. Well, then where are Clemson and Florida State, Miami going to go? They're not going to go to the Big 12.
Yeah. I think the question mark for me, but I agree with you in terms of current relevance. I think Jim Phillips becomes a question mark for me moving forward, because you have to have somebody who can blaze a better trail for this conference if you're going to see the ACC remain amongst the Power Four in the long term. It's just been weak leadership.
That's Brett Yormark, because I think
exactly.
I think that's who you take, is because Yormark has taken that WWE background and done really well, where Jim Phillips has stayed in the books from his days at Northwestern and just has not done a good job of championing that league and really really just putting them out there on the forefront. He should have been out there combative. You know, Greg Sankey was being combative. Greg Sankey was talking about 7 SEC teams, which is absolutely insane and ridiculous, being, you know, ready for the playoff. But Phillips should have been there politicking for Miami since day one, because Miami was the strongest ACC team in there outside of Virginia.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, part of the reason is we're looking at it through a lens of 2025. If we step back a little bit, we've got Florida State, who historically is a very good program. We have Miami, who somehow still hasn't won the ACC championship in 20 years or whatever, but again, historically a good program. We have Clemson, who's won a couple of natties in the last decade. We have Virginia Tech, who now has James Franklin, and ask any of them, they're a top, you know, 10 to 15 team in the country already. So, you know, if those 4 teams are playing up to, you know, kind of what we expect from them, then we're having a much different conversation. The problem is Clemson was down. Virginia Tech was terrible. Miami was good, but pulled a full Miami a couple of times and lost a couple of games they shouldn't have. And I'll be honest, I don't know what in the hell is going on with Florida State, but apparently that's going to continue, you know, through next year with Norvell. But, you know, the problem is that our arguably top 4 historically programs were all down. So, yeah, I mean, or, you know, Miami's down a little bit. But so, yeah, it looks way worse than it is, especially when you compare it to the Big 12, who all of a sudden Texas Tech just goes nuts, pour money in the program, and they're getting a bye in the college football playoff. But you can't look at it through a 1-year lens. And I, you know, do I think things will be better? Yeah. SMU, they have more money than anybody. That's a, you know, that's a sleeping giant program. So I refuse to believe that the conference is going to fall apart. And again, part of that is, where are these schools going to go? I mean, is the SEC looking to expand anytime soon?
I don't think so.
I don't think so right now either, but I think it is a fluid question, because we've seen that kind of shift and move. And I think that there's other variables that determine at what point Greg Sankey wants or doesn't want to make moves. And to be honest with you, I'm not in the know enough or smart enough to know exactly what those variables are, but we've seen him make those shifts and changes. We know that he loves contiguous states. We know that he loves flagship programs. And so I can see some moves, like, honestly, UNC and UVA, I think, are attractive pieces in his mind, maybe more so than Clemson and Florida State.
Greg would need to have to add lacrosse, because if UNC and UVA are going anywhere, they're going to the Big Ten, and they're going to go with Maryland, because that would make an excellent lacrosse conference. I do have a question for Who's about his favorite new ACC coach, James Franklin. Does James Franklin automatically – you know, vault Virginia Tech up into the top 10, 15, and will you ever eat crumble cookies again?
So do you want my real answer or what I've been saying on the timeline? That's the real question.
You know what? I think let's get wild and crazy. It's Sunday night, whatever you want to go with.
It's 9:20. Yeah. If the viewers and listeners are still here at 9:20 into the show, then they're here for the genius segment. And so, right. Give us that full energy, Hoos.
I have been full on trolling Virginia Tech ever since the Franklin hire. Just among us, I said from the beginning that I thought Franklin was a perfect fit at Virginia Tech. I think there was a series of events that where Penn State has, I don't know what in the world they've been doing, but there is a series of events that led to him ending up at Virginia Tech. And then, you know, obviously they've gotten a lot of good recruits in, so that's a good thing. I don't think that James Franklin is some kind of savior. If you look back through the people, and this is one of my favorite things that's happened, these people at Virginia Tech are the most excited about James Franklin. If you look back through their old tweets, there's a UVA account that did this. They were all dumping on him, talking about how he's the worst coach in the Big Ten in big games. And so, that narrative changes. And I get it. You get your guy, you're going to feel differently. But, you know, there are also some things Virginia Tech fans are ignoring. Did he get a bunch of recruits, you know, over the last couple of weeks? Yeah, they those guys committed to Penn State who did not have a coach. Where do you think they're going to go? Of course, he didn't get those guys in 2 weeks. Those are relationships that he's had for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. The other thing is, you know, Virginia Tech fans are convinced that this is the biggest thing I've been trolling them about. That they're in the top 10 to 15 in the country as far as money, which is an insane thing to say. I mean, they're not in the top 10 in the SEC. And, you know, frankly, we have way more money than they do. Our problem has been historically, we don't put it in the football program. And so, you know, if they have some expectation that they are going to operate, you know, in the top 10 NIL in the country going forward, that's just not going to happen. So do I think, you know, James Franklin can get them back up to better than 3-9? I mean, I hope so for them because they were pretty miserable this year, which I fully enjoyed.
The only question that I have is, are they going to pay Brent Pry two checks, like one for a buyout and one for current employment, or can they like direct deposit that all together? I don't really know how that works.
So listen, man, my favorite thing that I've seen about the Brent Pry about Brent Pry coming back, it was our friend 3-year Letterman. He said, this is like your wife divorcing you, getting remarried, and then inviting you back to be the live-in butler. I mean, it's like, have some pride. You know,
like, it's a strange situation.
And it's a strange situation. And I won't even get into the rumors, you know, that I've heard about the stuff that led to him being fired, but Virginia Tech fans were awful about that guy for the last year and a half. I can't imagine going back there after I was treated like that, but you know, I guess when you got a hog like Brent Pry, you do whatever the hell you want to do. So
if Bobby Petrino can make his way back to Arkansas, Brent Pry can find his way back to Virginia Tech.
And on that note, we're right in the middle of it. Let's do some boards, gentlemen, shall we? Let's jump in here and do it. I got a handful. We got a handful of minutes and more boards than we have minutes.
Let me do something tonight. You brought the brains of the show on. You might as well let me do something.
They do love your vocal out there in SEC Sunday Night fandom. So go ahead, Casey.
All right. MBG put out Alabama should have lost to Auburn so they could have hired Lane Kiffin. And our friend Mark Ajour says, we would regret missing Lane. Would have rather lost to Auburn to get him. This team has no heart and cannot compete.
Classic. I mean,
he's not wrong.
Classic Bama overreaction. You're in the SEC championship game, but you cannot compete. In the college football playoff.
Question, though. If Matt Campbell would not have gone to Penn State earlier this week and DeBoer leaves, does Kiffin break Joy's heart and then go to Tuscaloosa?
No.
I think
Kiffin does whatever the hell he wants to do.
I mean, damn right. Like, what if Tuscaloosa's like, we got some really good hot yoga here?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I've always liked Lane until this last turn. I mean, he's clearly loyal to Lane. And so, you know, is that out of the question that he would somehow try and get out of that contract with LSU and go to Bama if it was open? I don't think so.
I don't think so. And that was the same thing I was talking with Rob about before the show. I'm like, I was always the biggest Lane like apologist and the biggest Lane slappy. I'm like, oh, I get why people think he's kind of a jerk now because I'm kind of pissed at what he did.
He left Ole Miss.
Yeah.
I loved him at Ole Miss, though. I thought that was such a perfect spot for him.
But it works better, right? It, like when you're punching up, and you've got the chip on your shoulder, it doesn't work as well when you're the big dog.
I totally agree.
Well, didn't we see that at Southern Cal? He was the big dog then.
Yep.
All right, we'll move on to Ole Miss. Pete needs a shave and a haircut, says our friend Rebel with a Cause 1, because apparently Rebel with a Cause was already taken. So it says Pete needs a haircut and a hair. Pete needs a shave and a haircut image, you know. And he definitely does not have the look of a typical Ole Miss male. Just saying. But I laughed at this one because it's what is the typical Ole Miss male?
Is it like bow tie and a seersucker?
I think it's bangs. I think it's the frat bangs and the 2-inch inseam shorts, right? Is that it?
I don't think it's that far from the typical UVA frat boy, to be honest with you. I mean, it's, you know,
2025 UVA frat boy.
I mean, that's true.
They're both from New Jersey, so it doesn't really matter. You know?
That's also true.
But I love Golding, man. I want my coach to look like a big slob. Like, you know, I want him looking like he's been, you know, sleeping in the film room all week, you know, hasn't showered. He's so invested he's going out there. Who wants like a fancy looking coach? You think Kirby cares what he looks like?
No.
You know who doesn't care for a fancy coach? Tennessee. Josh Heupel has not looked to improve his image in quite some time.
No.
That's beautiful.
Casey, did you want to leave Ole Miss out because Pete doesn't look good? Is that?
No,
I'm
hoping he puts on a couple pounds from like stress and stuff so he can join into my fat coach Hall of Fame.
That's right. Casey and I like the big uglies.
Yeah.
A little basketball.
All right. We're moving into basketball, which is weird. But Kentucky should bring back Coach Cal. Do we try to bring back Cal? Fire Mitch, and we may have a chance. We are a joke. I think this is in response to they lost by 114 to Gonzaga the other night. And who's Mitch? Is that
Mitch Barnhart is their AD.
Oh, all right, good.
They also lost to North Carolina, and they got popped by Louisville as well.
But so they're still ranked, which is weird.
Yep. Well, and their coach made some questionable comments in the press conference and actually had to be escorted out by the athletic director. So not
great. He did make some extreme messed up comments. Yeah.
You can Google those. We will not be reading those on air.
We read some questionable things on air. Not those.
Nope. Not those.
Is this where I'm allowed to say that UVA basketball is back? Matt, let's give us a plug.
Absolutely. All are welcome, Hoos. All are welcome.
Yeah, if you watched, and listen, I love Tony Bennett. Like, he's Hall of Fame coach, one of the best guys ever. If you watch us play under Tony Bennett and you haven't seen us play this year, you are not going to wreck. It's not the same game at all. Like, we're averaging, I don't think we've scored under 80 yet this year. And we play. Yeah, and defense is somewhat optional, so it's a
that is quite a stark comparison.
Yeah,
you know, but you know what though? Sometimes that is just more fun. Like just go and just run, because you get stressed like when you don't score. So just keep scoring, just keep going, and just kind of embrace it for what it is.
Yeah, but that contrast got to be a mind.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we had a guy off the bench yesterday go. So he's not even a starter. He's like our sixth or seventh guy. Go 9 for 9 from the field, including 7 for 7 on threes. I mean, it's insane to watch now.
And Virginia lost their 3-point shooter, didn't they, to Louisville?
Oh yeah, but we loaded up. We've got Euros. We got all kinds of fun stuff, man.
Hey, we need you both back on for basketball because y'all can talk to Rob while I try to like polish up.
Yeah, don't ask me, John.
Hey, by the way, speaking of basketball, how does 9 to 7 sound to you guys? Did that work out in everybody's favor?
Is that a basketball score?
That would be the ACC, SEC challenge.
Tony Bennett score.
That's a lot better than last year.
You know my phrase, Rob. Hang the banner.
Here's the thing, though. Last year, I think the SEC may have had the best year that any conference has ever had in the sport of basketball. That's unrealistic to expect to see that again. And the ACC had an uncharacteristically extremely down year outside of Clemson. And so it's expected that they're going to move back up. So just kind of seeing it balance back out as I do the 6-7 motion with my hands off camera, we see it bouncing back out. And that gives us kind of that 9-7.
I'm sure y'all were okay with us beating the hell out of Texas. So, you know, we did everybody a favor.
Not mad.
Easy. Well, Arch doesn't play for the basketball team, so we're okay with that slander here.
That's right. Speaking of Texas, MBG says this Texas fan thinks it's time for DeLoss Dodds to pony up. Tech buys a championship. Tito Meoff says, pretty good article in the DMN this morning on TT. A comment by Rodriguez said it all, and he's right. If you're going to buy a team, why not buy the best? Time for Dodds and Sark to pony up.
Isn't pony up a weird phrase to use as a Texas fan talking about Texas Tech?
Yep.
Aren't we overlooking something there?
I hear enough pony up already.
Right.
Way too much, and it's only been 2 years.
That's right.
I do wish, like part of me does wish that, like, North Texas and Texas, like, kind of got into the playoff and, like, you had, like, this big, like, Texas Bowl going on. That would have been a lot of fun just to see if Texas A&M could have, like, navigated this. But, I mean, this is why Texas has been successful, isn't it? Sark has actually aligned the boosters, and it's got to piss them off, like, what Cody Campbell did over at Texas Tech. But this is, you know, that's the blueprint, but, like, Texas is already doing this. They already got the best athletic director out there. So,
And Texas Tech is for real. I mean, I haven't seen them play a ton, but they're good. Their defense
is very good. They're going to give people a lot of problems. I think the challenge they have, and this is something that Sark and the Longhorns can identify with, they have challenge scoring in the red zone. They have some red zone issues where a lot of times they're settling for field goals. So, but yeah, I fully expect like them to be a real problem.
That's Oregon, Texas Tech, probably in the second round. That could be a good game.
Well, let's reach outside of the league as we shut it down here for one of the, I think, most far-reaching takes of the week.
This Ohio State fan is done with Ryan Day, says MBG. He says this team has, from Bucknuts, what's his name? Minka Kelly. Minka Kelly, that was Derek Jeter's ex-girlfriend. This team has the same chance of winning a title as JMU does. I've overcoached Day. This was the most pathetic coaching job as there is. I just read it as it's written, folks.
Wow. Grammarly.
I can't believe that this guy's lost. And who says this all the time on our show? What's his record? He's got like six losses ever.
He's like got seven losses or something like that his whole career.
Right. But it's like, in the most important and like the most important game.
Can we get rid of him? They're going to lose.
I think it would be hilarious if he just decided he was over all their nonsense and just left. Because the issue is Indiana is good. I mean, no one wants to admit that. And I can't stand Cignetti, but they're good. They're a legit team. They can win the whole thing. And so the idea that, you know, you lose in the Big Ten championship game and then, you know, somehow, you know, you have no chance of winning the Natty is just crazy to me.
I was shocked though last night watching that Big Ten championship. So I know they got stuffed on 4th-and-1 saying like slipped or whatever. And they, you know, they were short. I did not agree though. Like it was 4th-and-1 again. And yet again, you know, he decides to kick the field goal and they miss. I'm sorry. Like, this is the thing that I said with Drew Crabtree, our Ohio State writer, a few weeks ago. You're Ohio State. Go act like Ohio State and go win the damn game. Don't kick a field goal. Don't tie it up with 2:30 to go. Send a message to your team and send a message that we're going to come in and we're going to kick your ass. And to me, like, sure, you know what? He'd still be an idiot if they missed it. But it's about establishing that mentality. They did that last week in Ann Arbor. I don't think they did a great job of that against Indiana. I know Indiana's tougher.
You are absolutely right. And you should send a message. Message that we want to get out there and compete. We want to play this game. And that is the exact opposite of what Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame did. And on that note, ladies and gents, we're going to get out of here. Shout out to Daily Joy, to Tony Syracuse, Maggie Johnson,
so
and our
lame
friends here. Casey and Who's for being with us for It Just Means More Genius. I'm Rob Williams. He is Craig McMichael. And this, as always, is SEC Sunday Night live on the Chief Sports Network. We'll be right back here next Sunday at 8 as we get into much more coverage of the college football playoff. We'll see you next week.